welcome to State of Utah, presented by Silicon Slopes Commons. My name is Clint Betts. On today's show, we talk to the leaders of the Democratic and Republican Party. The Democrat Party, the Republican Party. We talked to leaders of both. We had an interesting conversation with both. Hope you enjoy it. Derek, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. You are the head of the Utah Republican Party. When you took over, how long have you been in this position, Derek?
Oh, it feels like about 8 years, but I think the reality is it's about a year and a half now.
So a year and a half ago when you took over, it felt like the party was in a bit of disarray. And, you know, there was this looming debt over the party. There were all sorts of, you know, different things and lawsuits, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It kind of seemed like a bit of a mess. It no longer seems like a mess. How have you turned it around?
Well, we've had a lot of people that have stepped up. I mean, I you know, when I ran, I had a lot of people kind of supporting me, and everyone kind of said, look, if you do this, if you win, we're all there. We're all, you know, part of the team. And the debt itself was a multiple of what I thought it was, unfortunately. And we did have lawsuits, and we did have fines with the FEC from stuff from years ago. And so I just kind of got in, rolled my sleeves up, and went, all right, this is going to be ugly, but let's see what, you know, let's lift the hood up and see what there is. And anyway, but we had a lot of folks stepped up, and we got the debt paid off. We got lawsuits settled. We got FEC fines taken care of. And I just said, look, all that really matters to me is that we focus on elections. I mean, that's really what a party ought to do. Like, let's have a structure run by adults that's actually does what the structure's supposed to do. Choose your nominee. And once you get your nominee, then, you know, then your job is to get your nominee across the finish line. Everything else is just, you know, less important.
Well, this may seem like a dumb question, but what's the difference between a state party and the national party? I mean, why do state parties exist?
It's sort of an affiliate of the national party is really what it is. The national, the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, sort of, it's almost like they have 50 affiliates. And, you know, it really comes into play when you see it with like the presidential debate. So, or not debate, rather the convention. And so we saw that last time around. I mean, it's the delegates from the state party and the state party's process that are the ones that go to the national convention and then select the nominee. So, you know, if the president were to die, for instance, you know, something morbid like that, I mean, again, we would have delegates that would go and, you know, can reconvene and, but they would be all the state delegates chosen by the state parties.
So if the president dies while running for reelection of a party, obviously the vice president becomes president, but the vice president doesn't become the nominee of that party in that election unless it goes through the state delegates in the convention, right?
Yeah, it's actually a little more complicated than that, and actually a little more simple at the same time. If that were to happen, I mean, theoretically, and that was actually kind of a subtext with this debate. I mean, we have two candidates right now who are as old as any candidates in history. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they asked a question about that. And I mean, everyone's kind of thinking about it. But if something happened, like, for instance, if the president were to pass away in office, even though he's my party's nominee, what would happen is the members of the Republican National Committee would get together in a convention, and not thousands and thousands of them, but basically there's three from every state and three from six territories. So there's 168 people. And so I'm one of the three, for instance, from Utah. So 168 of us would get together. We would select the next nominee. And then, you know, at this point, the ballots aren't going to change because it's so close to the election. But we would, in essence, choose who the party's nominee is, and then that would be the next nominee.
That's fascinating.
So a lot of intrigue, you know, and the tricky thing would be, what if there were severe disagreements? My guess is everyone would probably select the vice president as the nominee. I mean, I think you'd expect that. But if there were disagreements, you know, it could be an interesting situation.
So you had a fascinating gubernatorial race, primary this year. Very, very tight race with Spencer Cox eking out what I felt was a major upset against John Huntsman. You don't have to comment on whether it's an upset or not. But
yeah,
I mean, that gubernatorial race was fascinating. You know, Spencer's now up by like 30 points. It's very likely that he's going to be governor. So that kind of was like the race for governor in a lot of ways. And then once Spencer won, there was talk from Huntsman's camp and Huntsman's family and some of Huntsman's campaign about a write-in candidacy. What was your thought on that? It's already over now, and you know, you luckily don't even have to deal with this. But I imagine the party just supports its nominee, right, regardless of what.
Yeah. I mean, I had some people saying, "Well, if a Republican still runs as a write-in, what do you do?" And the answer is, the party does two things. I mean, we exist, as I said, to figure out who the nominee is, and then get that person across the finish line. Once the primary was over, the party was 100% in for Spencer Cox from that day on. And, and I heard rumors of a write-in, but I mean, the reality is it is like enormously difficult. One senator has done it in U.S. history, Senator Murkowski. And I think actually there's more than that, but the time before that was Strom Thurmond, like in the 40s or something. You know, I mean, it's too much of a pull to get people to write your name in. So, you know,
it feels weird, right? Because, you just lost in the primary. What is the reason to, go to, And anybody could, if you registered as Republican, you could vote in that primary. It's right. Fascinating. Luckily you didn't have to deal with it, my friend.
That would have been more complicating. Yeah. It would have been more complicating than, I would have liked to have thought of, but I mean, it's 2020. So every time I thought, generally whenever I think what could complicate my life even more, that's what happens, at least in this year. I mean, maybe next year is a different thing, but 2020, that's how it works.
The closest election appears in the general side of things here in the state of Utah is Congressional District 4 between Congressman Ben McAdams and Burgess Owens. How do you see that playing out?
It's going to be close. I think there's a good chance that Burgess does pull it out. And part of that is just a function of turnout. One of the reasons that McAdams didn't win last time was there were a lot of problems with people turning out to vote. I mean, in Utah County, they had lines and lines on voting, on the election day. We're not going to see any of that this year. So a lot of it it's a function of, do people actually get out to vote? And if you look at the primary election this year, at least from the Republican Party standpoint, the most people we've ever had vote in a primary was about 250,000. And we had a couple of the governor races sort of internally were predicting we could have as many as 380,000 votes. And most people said, myself included, I don't think we get to 380. We've never had more than 250. Well, not only did we get 380, we got about 527,000. So more than twice what we've ever had. So if that kind of turnout is sort of an indicator of what may happen in a couple weeks, there could be some serious upsets.
Man, they're running ads constantly. It's just constant ads. I'm watching like the NBA finals or the Major League Baseball playoffs. As soon as a commercial, it's like a Owens ad, it's a McAdams ad. Man, a lot of money's being spent on that.
There's millions. And a lot of the money is not from here locally. It's from the national parties. And part of it is because both of the national parties understand that like this race could go either way. Of the 435 members of Congress, like most of them, 90% are, you kind of know where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. And then you have this small, this small percentage where it really could go either way. And so most of the hundreds of millions of dollars spent on these things are spent on, honestly, like 20 or 30 races around the country. And here in Utah, that happens to be one of them.
So the big topic of the general election is the big topic of the Republican primary is how the state has handled the COVID-19 pandemic. How do you think the state's done?
Well, I like the fact that our state leaders have, they stepped up, they did some good work. I think we've had some missteps. And I think one of the things I like is they're willing to say, look, this is something we could have done better. And I like to see that. I mean, there are certain people who will take that and try to exploit it. But if you look at results, I mean, really, it's this balancing of health issues and the economy. And, there's a lot kind of going on. And if you look at, unemployment, I mean, we've got the lowest unemployment in the country. If you look at, fatalities from COVID, we have one of, if not the lowest in the country. I mean, so we are doing things right. And I think we're learning. And I mean, we must be doing something right because a lot of people are coming here to Utah from play, from other states. There's a lot of people in my neighborhood who are moving from California back into my area to live with mom and dad and bring their grandkids. I mean, there's a reason people are coming from other states to Utah. So we must be doing something right.
I think it's fair to say that Utah is a Republican state,
I think it's
controlled by the
fair.
Republican party. Do you think
Yeah.
that'll always be the case? Do you see the demographics changing, over the next 10, 15 years where it becomes more of a purple state?
You know what? I do. I mean, I do. And when I ran for the state party chair, I talked about this a lot because the reality is, if you look at and frankly, I've talked about Spen with Spencer Cox, and I've talked about this a lot through the years, because if you look at the demographics and the trends, the reality is they don't look good for Republicans, and particularly here in Utah. I mean, when it comes to the 30 and under crowd, Republicans are not doing very well. When it comes to demographics such as the in-migration into Utah from other states, I mean, you look at a number of those different sort of demographic trends and sort of the population trends, and no, it doesn't. It doesn't look promising for Republicans, and so that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of taking this job seriously, is because I think Utah is on track to do, I think, what all the states around us have done. I mean, every state around us 10 or 15 years ago was red. And now they're all blue, with the exception of Arizona, that's kind of purple. Yet Arizona is kind of ground zero for the Trump Biden war right now. I mean,
Yeah, I
there's
saw a
a lot of
poll.
money.
Biden's up currently in
Yeah.
Arizona, if you believe the polls, which I don't know why we would after 2016, but the polls are saying that Biden's winning there. My final question for you is thinking about next year. What are the Utah Republican Party's goals for next year?
But most of them are going to be for this coming year. Like, once the elections are over, it's more organizational goals. There are things we need to do as a party, in terms of data, in terms of setting up a longer term structure. And one of the things I want to do is make sure that when I'm no longer in this position, that we have sort of this continuity, because I really did have to start from scratch. When I came in, we had virtually no data to speak of. We didn't even not only had debts, but we had I mean, the phones have been turned off for non-payment. So, I mean, I kind of felt like I was starting a company from scratch. And so my goal is to for this next year is to set in place funding mechanisms and other sort of approaches and protocols to make sure that we have kind of, longevity and continuity moving into the future.
Derek, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure we'll have you on again. Really appreciate it. Good to see you.
Sounds good. Thanks. You too, Clint. Appreciate it.
Nadia, thank you so much for joining us. I would love to have you explain to our viewership who you are and a little bit about what you do with the Utah Democratic Party.
Thanks, Liz. My name is Nadia Mahalati. I am currently the vice chair of the Utah State Democratic Party. I've been in that role for a bit over a year. As part of that, I am a member of the DNC. And outside of all of that, I guess I'm wrapping up my PhD in political science, studying public policy, and I teach at the U and at Salt Lake Community College.
Awesome. So we're just kind of going to jump in here. The vast majority of the American public, not only Utahns, but the entire American public, doesn't really understand the roles of state parties. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand, and it's very frustrating when you're trying to raise money and advocate for a state party. So basically, there are three levels of the party. There is the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and then there are the state parties. The Democrats have 57 because we include DC, the territories, and Democrats abroad. And then each state is divided into smaller levels, whether by county or legislative district. So the role of the state party is to manage the stuff that happens in that state. And so like the statewide governor's race would be under the purview of a state party. And then the state party also coordinates with outside groups to help on larger races like US Senate or House races. So another role of the state party is just to coordinate all of those smaller groups. So in Utah, we have 28 counties, so there are 28 county Democratic parties. And so there's supposed to be collaboration between the different levels of the party. And so some of the things that you would expect from a state party would be to help with recruiting, help fundraise, work on communications, and just kind of be the leader for the races in that state so that they can look to on how they should be messaging, what they should be thinking about, maybe coordinating the topics for each week, and then raising money to pay for things that affect all Democrats, like getting out the vote.
Okay, awesome. So we're going to switch gears just a little bit. The president has COVID-19, and it's kind of an interesting situation where there's a lot of mixed messaging on how he's doing and how that's going to affect the nation moving forward. What happens if the president dies while they're running for re-election?
Yeah, so it would depend on when in the process the presidential candidate dies. If he dies after the Electoral College has already cast their ballots and Congress has verified it, then the vice president would just become the president immediately upon the president's death and then be inaugurated on January 20th. If the president dies before then is where things get a little bit more complicated. All of the ballots have already been printed. Millions of Americans have already voted. So it's impossible to change what the ballot itself says. So people will still be voting maybe for somebody who has since passed away, or they voted for somebody who died after they cast their ballot. The bigger question is what would happen at the Electoral College level. Because we don't have a popular election of our presidents, we use the popular vote in each state to inform who these electors are, and they officially cast the ballots for president. I would imagine the easiest way to handle this would be to all of the electors must agree to work out this strategy of either still voting for President Trump as president and Mike Pence as vice president, and then have those counts verified, and then Pence would just become, under the 25th Amendment, the president at the time. Another approach that they could take is to vote for Mike Pence for president, even though he was running as a vice presidential candidate. That could work, and then they would need to figure out who the vice presidential candidate would be. There would have to be a lot of collaboration, though, because in order to win, a candidate has to have 270 electoral votes. So if some states are voting for Trump for president and other states are voting for Pence, it would create a chaotic situation where there might not even be a majority winner.
That's a scary thought. So, yeah, totally. I mean, it would make perfect sense for how insane this year has been so far. Trump has recently said that he will not engage in a digital debate now that the debate commission is thinking about doing the next presidential debate digitally. Do you think that helps or hurts him here in Utah?
That's tough to say. Trump is already not the most popular in Utah. In 2016, of all of the states that President Trump won, Utah was the state where he won by the least. He only had a plurality of around 46%. But given how the state is responding to COVID, I get the sense that a lot of Utahns just aren't taking the pandemic as seriously as they ought to be. Because we keep setting new records of the number of cases, and now 500 Utahns have died from this virus. So it's kind of a toss-up. Nationally, I think the polls are putting Vice President Biden ahead, and so he doesn't really have much to lose if there isn't a debate, but Trump would lose out on the opportunity to try to plead his case to any undecided voters.
Definitely. And you brought up the virus and how everybody is responding all across the world. How do you think Utah has done in its response to the pandemic?
Utah's response has been an utter failure. You look at the per capita cases, they are extremely high. We're ranked as one of the biggest hotspots in the country right now. And also we have some of the fewest restrictions on behavior and activities. So I know correlation isn't causation, but I think there can be a case that just asking people to wear masks is not working. And that's the approach that Governor Herbert has been taking this whole time, is please be neighborly and wear a mask. Well, we have over 6 months of data showing that not everybody is doing that. And it's not my mask protects me, it's my mask protects you, your mask protects me. So you need everybody to buy into this idea, and it's just not happening.
That's, yeah, We've seen a lot of that, especially lately with these giant spikes. It's kind of scary. So let's switch a little bit back to the partisan stuff. What's it like to be a Democrat in Utah?
It can be challenging, but it can also be really rewarding. So I happen to live in Salt Lake County, which is the most liberal county, and in Salt Lake City, which is the most liberal city, and in the Avenues, which is a very liberal neighborhood within the city. So personally and geographically, I'm a little bit more isolated from that. But when I travel the state, I do see that daily life is a lot different for Democrats. Sometimes their signs get stolen. This cycle, we've had somebody's sign get set on fire in Utah County, which was a little scary. One time I was in a more rural part of the state and somebody said he would rather shoot a Democrat than vote for one. So there are definite real challenges. But at the same time, I think that it's really exciting to be a Democrat in Utah. We have changing demographics. We have more people moving into the state. We have more liberal views coming from younger people. And so what we can see from the propositions from 2018 is that people are not happy with how the supermajority Republican-led government is doing. They were unhappy that the legislature refused to expand Medicaid. They were unhappy that the legislature refused to take action on medical marijuana, and they were unhappy that the government refused to have a strategy for fair legislative boundaries. So there's a lot of opportunities, and it's really exciting.
Speaking of opportunities, what do you think the next 10 years will look like for Utah's political future?
I think we'll continue to shift at least more purple because of all those factors that I just laid out. My hope is that we can see some more diversity in our elected officials, from the governor down to, you know, local school boards. Our state legislature is only 24% women. That is not a lot. And it's like the highest that it's ever been. So it's just really alarming at that. Our legislature is incredibly white. Of course, Utah is a white state, but still the racial and ethnic breakdown of the legislature doesn't match that of the population. So those are the things that I'm really hoping is for a more effective democracy where the people's votes are electing people who can reflect their values and their lived experiences.
So what is the Democratic Party's goals beyond the election?
So one of the goals for the state Democratic Party is to continue to build up our infrastructure. It's really important that we are electing Democrats at the nonpartisan municipal level. So that's something that we'll immediately shift to after this election, is getting Democrats elected in races where they don't have to identify as a Democrat, and that people can just look at the values and the goals of these candidates and elect them and not be turned off by a partisan label. We also need to continue to raise money so that that can in turn be used to further improve the infrastructure. We need to have a more robust training program for candidate staff and volunteers. I would like to see more professionalization of the staff who are working on campaigns. I'd like to see the staff of the state party expand. I think that's really important. We're just running a small team and they're doing a good job, but more hands on deck is always better. And I would like to see some of these districts that are toss-up districts turn blue.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Nadia. We really appreciate your input and your explanation of what state parties do in Utah, and I'm sure we'll have you on again soon.
Thanks, Liz.
I want to thank each of my guests for coming on today's show. If you'd like to see a certain guest, reach out to us at stateofutah@siliconslopes.com. If you'd like us to cover a specific topic, reach out to us at stateofutah@siliconslopes.com. Signing off for now, my name is Clint Betts, and this has been another episode of State of Utah, presented by Silicon Slopes Commons.